All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 17th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a muggy 68 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. We have had torrential rain over the last, I'd have to say, week now. And everything is soggy, and it's smelling like a terrarium out there. But at least for the end of the summer, all of the greenery got green again. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show DARPA, DEFCON, AI, Nanobot Legions, and the Brain. Yeah, we touched on all those scary things. Good old DARPA's been involved in a lot of different things, and you know, the more we dig into the things that they're doing, that DEFCON especially, using 7 supercomputers and artificially intelligent software to be able to be autonomous hackers and crackers for the internet, because remember, it was never built to be secure. They're going to use it to be able to find vulnerabilities in foreign actors. I like saying that. People, countries, and individuals that we find to be quote-unquote dangerous. And don't think, just because we're domestic actors, that we aren't potentially on that list. You know, just because something is built for DARPA doesn't mean it stays at DARPA. DARPA is just the black hole powerhouse where they get the money to do the research to then roll out the technologies to, I don't know, I mean, they would say to help us. I would say to enslave us. I mean, at least in the past, the internet and Surrey and some things of that nature that DARPA invented maybe made our lives a little bit richer. But some of this insane stuff with implants, brain implants, and robo-soldiers and robo-hacker computer programs aren't looking like they're going to make the future very rosy to me. On that note, there was a story I found after the show was over that I wanted to touch on, talking about DARPA building autonomous hackers. Elon Musk popped up like a little whack-a-mole. He's everywhere. And he had something to say about the DARPA Grand Challenge, Hacking Challenge, DEFCON. And I tend to listen, even though he's a rich billionaire. He's a pretty bright cookie. And I know, I definitely think that Musk is probably in on the agenda. You know, he's partnering with NASA. I don't know if you guys knew that. I thought we covered something on that a while back. But NASA leased him. I think it was a pretty long-term lease, too. Some of their facilities to build a SpaceX. And as part of that program, they had also lent him potentially employees and knowledge. And in exchange for that, Musk is to share with NASA all that he comes to conclusion-wise as well. So Musk has been brought in as like an informal NASA space partner, which seems kind of odd for some rich tech billionaire who's making self-driving cars, power walls, and rocket ships, and probably robots. But he's come out a whole bunch of times now and had something to say about AI. You know, he was the one who said that future artificial intelligence supercomputing machines will have humans as pets. And you know what? I believe that. Well, here Musk comes out and has something else to say. Elon Musk says DARPA's AI hacking challenge will lead to Skynet. Ding! Now, we've joked about that a whole bunch of times, but it's funny, but it's not funny. If you know what I mean? Because I don't think that that's too far off. You know, a thinking, calculating, self-aware artificial intelligence is no joke at all. Especially one that has been designed to go out and find vulnerabilities and take advantage of them. That is called a predator. You know, that is not so warm and fuzzy. That is Terminator. You know, and this is going to be built for the Department of Defense with a search and destroy mission. How is this a good thing? And how is this being allowed to happen? We read that article yesterday. Tony was in like one of the technical publications, WinIT Pro, and little Tony was questioning the machine. But you know what, Tony? I gotta say, maybe this bitch slapped you out of your complete and utter sleep about technology. I really think that you're onto something there. You know, all of a sudden going, oh, maybe DARPA taking over this hacker tech conference isn't in our best interest. And no, I don't think it is. And I think more and more of the tech industry is going to get sucked up. Hear the big sucking sound? It's not like Ross Perot said. It's not sucking all the jobs overseas. It's sucking all the tech industries into the military industrial complex is what's happening right now. Beware, techies. Beware. They're pulling you in. And anybody that is now attached to one of those devices are going to all get sucked into the Internet of Things as they release then their little monitoring nanobots inside of everything. I mean, we've covered that also. We're going to look at more of that today. This is a very frightening potential future here that is tra-la-laying down that golden path toward the Emerald Mansion. I don't know. Was it an Emerald Mansion? Emerald City. All right. So anyway, Elon Musk says DARPA AI hacking challenge will lead to Skynet. The Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, more affectionately known as DARPA, recently announced the Cyber Grand Challenge. And by the way, this is from July 14th, so it's about a month ago. They had already held, the conference was held last week in Vegas. anyway, they recently announced the Cyber Grand Challenge, a seven-team, $3.75 million prize pool hacking tournament that concludes in Vegas this August. DARPA's stated goal is to find new strategies for countering cyber warfare. But Elon Musk is not buying it. Ding! Good old Musk! In fact, he thinks that the Cyber Grand Challenge might leave us with something like Skynet, the hostile AI that routinely tries to destroy humanity in The Terminator. Now, come on. This is what I'm still kind of confused here. Like, Musk is playing with the big boys. Now, is it that Musk is rich enough and famous enough that he can, like, look at this and start poking holes and throwing stones at the big boys, and they still are going to play ball with him regardless if he's opening his mouth? Or is this just a moment of weakness? You know, and they kind of let it go because they're like, oh, it sounds crazy there, Elon. I mean, I would say if anyone was in the know, it would be him. He's quite a smart cookie, and he's got some pretty high-end stuff going. And the fact that Musk is warning us that the robots of tomorrow may keep us as pets because they're going to be way smarter than us and might leave us with something like Skynet should be highly concerning to everyone. Musk tweeted a not-so-veiling warning on Thursday morning, and this was back in July. And it's not just the first time he's gone on record as being fearful of a malicious supercomputer. And there you go. I mean, he's come out a couple times. On paper, DARPA wants to build an automated artificial intelligence that is capable of detecting and resolving bugs in a computer security system. Essentially, he wants to create an unsupervised, autonomous AI hacker extraordinaire that'll detect system vulnerabilities and then patch them itself. And as it stands today, of course, people perform the often thankless duties of cybersecurity, and expert hackers are adept at finding and fixing susceptibilities. But as cyber warfare becomes more prevalent, their demand for skills could surpass the supply. And the process of fixing a flaw, DARPA writes, quote, can take over a year from first detection to the deployment of a solution, which is time critical, and your systems may have already been breached. And the demand for quick fixes to ever-present security issues continues to rise as more and more devices are hacked. Oh my God, hackers under every bed. And as more and more devices communicate information over the internet, right? Because we're just plowing forward. Just connect everything because this is, you know, the way it's going to go. But whoops, we still don't have security. And whoops, oh, we have hackers everywhere. So anything you put out there could be hacked. I mean, I've talked about this before. We always had hackers. The last 25 years of the internet, we always had hackers. But we haven't had hackers like we've had today. I mean, just over the last 2 or 3 years or so, this has just gone off the hook like somebody turned up a switch and made all these hackings happen. I'm still going to call bullshit that we got hackers under every bed and in every closet in every corner of the planet trying to steal information. I mean, maybe now that it's been pushed to that level, but I don't know. I mean, when this all first started, oh my God, we got banks hacked and we got this one hacked and the biggest breach ever. I mean, they went for a good year, I would say. And just about every big institution got hacked and millions of people's information was stolen. But I really think that was just conditioning. I don't think necessarily that those were foreign actors. I had to say that again. I think, you know, good old Keith Alexander had all those cyber patrols and his subcontractor hacker black hat companies overseas that he was contracting. And I think that a lot of that was turned against ourselves. And I saw, as a matter of fact, that this NSA hacking that just happened, where they're now, I mentioned it yesterday, they're now putting some of that information up for sale to the highest bidder. Some of those records that they supposedly got in that hacking show that the NSA and their cronies, their hired hands, may have been responsible for some of the DNC hackings that they are trying to blame on Russia. And the story is, and I'm sure more will come out because it just happened, but the story that I read last night was that whoever is doing the hacking now and whoever hacked NSA might be holding on to those records. So when the DNC comes out and really tries to push that it was a foreign actor that hacked them to maybe start beating the war drums, they'll be able to come out and prove that we did it to ourselves as a false flag. And I mean, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that. Problem, reaction, solution. That's what it's all about. And, you know, we had hackers under every bed. That just kind of justified all this march forward. Remember Manette Napolitano when she was still head of the DHS? And we had the Iranian nuclear power plant with the Stuxnet. We found out that Stuxnet was a combination creation between Israel and us. CIA, we let it go. Whoops. Then there were questions as whether or not Stuxnet might have gotten to Fukushima. And then Manette Napolitano said, oh, one of our biggest fears is that our power infrastructure here in the United States is going to get attacked by hackers. And that's where your whole smart grid started coming from now. Smart homes, we're going to connect everything. I mean, guys, there's always an agenda for everything. And as they start digging in and making nothing secure, I mean, you are now cowering in a corner in the back of your closet after you've cleared it of terrorists and hackers and Zika mosquitoes. You're hiding safe in that dark little corner of your closet, quivering, saying, Uncle Sam, please, 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 keep me safe. I call bullshit. So now, oh, the internet is so unsafe. So now we need to create a self-shifting, evolving AI Terminator hacker cracker extraordinaire to keep us safe. Yep, that's the answer. So anyway, let's get back to the story. So Elon Musk is saying that this is going to turn into the Skynet that we feared. Yes, yes, yes. So, and the demand for quick fixes and ever-present security issues continues to rise as more and more devices every day communicate information over the internet. DARPA is arguing that cybersecurity AI system would be the, quote, first generation of machine that can discover, prove, and fix software flaws in real time without any assistance, making, quote, the whole world more secure. Wink. I mean, come on. You want me to believe that? You know, they're all crying about autonomous weapons making decisions on who to kill without any human intervention and how maybe that's not such a good thing. But they're going out with it anyway. So now, let's enable that same thing in cyberspace so it can go out and search and destroy. Maybe it'll be able to even zap us through our keyboard. You know, Keith Alexander had talked about that. If you haven't read it, it was a very, very long article. And we dedicated 2 days of the show to reading it and commenting. But if you want to read a little bit more in depth about what our cyber capabilities were even before this, and I'm talking, this is probably 2015, so this is a couple years back even, search Wired. So it was Wired Magazine and Keith Alexander. There is an expose, and it was probably a 6 or 10 page article, but I'm telling you, wow, did they give out a lot of information, and I don't know. I mean, it was the NSA, so I'm sure they blessed it, but if you want to learn about the internals and what we had before this whole Skynet challenge came up, I would highly recommend you read that. Now, Keith Alexander is no longer the head of the NSA. He is now in private practice, helping places like JPMorgan Chase stay safe from hackers. Wink. At $1 million a month. That's what he charges. I think it was JPMorgan Chase. It was one of the big boys. Pretty sure it was JPMorgan. And he told them that they were insecure, and they said, thanks, but no thanks, Mr. Former Head of the NSA. We don't need you in here to secure our computers. And he said, oh, are you sure? Because there's hackers under every bed. You better be careful. And then they got hacked. And the funniest part was, when the news came out about that hack, it says, well, there wasn't any important information stolen, but there were still, you know, 2.6 million records accessed, blah, blah, blah. Next time, it could be even worse. And, you know, come on, tell me that that was not a warning to get on board, JP Morgan, whoever it was. Because Keith Alexander, mister, I want $1 million a month now to keep you secure from the hackers that I created and unleashed on planet Earth. You know, that to me almost seemed like there was a blackmail. It was some sort of, you know, play ball or you're done. Because we got legions, not legions of nanobots this time, legions of hackers soon to have our AI Terminator. Anyway, Elon Musk, back in July, tweeted out, it's all fun and games until dot, dot, dot. And then he put a link to Wikipedia's Skynet, Skynet definition, which is pretty funny. Musk's tweet might seem like it's in jest, but he has a long record of being a watchdog toward the dangers of super powerful artificial intelligence. He signed that open letter, which lots of other scientists did as well, warning about AI, and has called the technology our greatest existential threat. Musk knows that this DARPA challenge probably won't spawn Skynet, wink, but it seems important to him that people consider the possibility of a malevolent artificial intelligence. And yeah, that's what I'm saying. Malevolent artificial intelligences don't work in my book. Nope, no room. We don't want that. And once as a society, we unleash such a beast. And, you know, I think Musk has actually talked about that as well. He's called this autonomous supercomputing technology, the unleashing the beast. Doomsayers say there will be no holding it back. And I'm going to agree with that assessment. Call me a tinfoil hat wearing lunatic, but I'm going to tell you what, I don't think I am. We do not want something way more intelligent than us that is inside of the machine with access to everything about you that has nasty intentions. Just will not fare well for the human race. All right, one of the other things we talked about yesterday was the brain. We ended the show looking at a story about how close are we to mapping the human brain. One of the things that we found out at the very end, Obama standing here in the White House announcing his brain initiative back a few years ago with a big 52-inch LCD display that says, yay, the brain initiative right next to him. One particular project known as the Brain Initiative has moved in to fill the gap, and this is to learn all we need to know about the human brain. So what? Oh, we could put in things and read things out of it, add things to it, learn to control and manipulate it. You know, we've done all that over the last few weeks, last few years, last few months. We've talked about it exhaustively, and they are all balls out now trying to crack all of our secrets. But we found out, in addition to mapping the 86 billion neurons, the Allen Institute for Brain Science, ding, 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 this is a company owned by Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft. And he has offered to put himself out there and build a database of all the information that they find as a part of this brain initiative. Now, wonderful is that? So we got Microsoft, and they were working on deep learning projects before this. We got Google and Amazon in with the DOD and the Broad Institute, which is the home of synthetic biology. I get hiccups somehow. I usually get hiccups. Now these guys are all on the same team. And it's them versus us. We are in the petri dish. And we are the squeaky little mouse. Wait. We are the ones that they're looking at with magnifying glass, watching how we react to things, and then making notations and putting us in the database. I mean, how disturbing is it that we have literally become, and not that we weren't before, but I mean, it is on paper now. We probably have assigned numbers. It's our social security number. 1172. Look at how she reacts when we put weird shit in her food. You know, look at how he reacts when we start zippity zapping him and he doesn't know where that noise is coming from. I mean, I think it's going to get to that. And this is unacceptable. This, how are we allowing this to happen? This really is like the man behind the curtain, except it's the mad scientist behind the curtain now. Back to that Unit 731, the one I always forget. With human experimentation, back during World War II in Japan. And this is unethical. And they're doing it all in the name of science, of course, because it's all in the name of making you live longer, making you happier and healthier, and saving the planet. Oh my God, climate change. We got to make sure that these bacteria that have minds of their own will be able to create matter and prevent you from having to drive cars. I don't know. I mean, this is, it's like this fairy tale that they're morphing. And they just keep adding more stuff on, and they're like, oh, look at how amazing. And society has been trained to be addicted to this new technology and these new devices like a little rat in a maze. It's the dopamine reward system. You know, every time you get a new shiny bauble, everyone runs out and buys it if the price is right, especially if it makes you special or smarter, Johnny, or prettier. Or wittier, you know. I mean, they use all these little stupid things. And don't think that they're not studying psychology. You know, I really tried to go back and find. We covered that group that the White House was looking for someone to head, where it was like the psychological division to help spin new White House programs to the public for us resistant consumers. and I can't find it now, but we did a big story, and I know I had a picture I even did in a post when it first came out, but they have all of these psychology departments and neuroscientists. And don't forget Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, is over at Google, Verily. They have all these people who understand the human brain and psyche and how to manipulate it well, working on spinning these programs so they gain wide acceptance from the population. And there's a purpose for that. Good old Edward Bernays wasn't hired for no reason. Anyway, as part of this Brain Initiative, they are looking at splitting up all the different types of neurons and databasing them into classes so they'll be able to better understand the taxonomy and how all the bits and pieces go together and, of course, how to manipulate them better. It says not only is the data collected important, but the methodology used will aid others in future initiatives. The effort is exceedingly complex to successfully map the brain. Researchers must identify millions of data points. Electrical readings are first taken by delivering current to neurons via pipettes or tiny tubules. And yeah, let's deliver current to neurons and brains. And the average human hair is only about 75 microns. A human red blood vessel is 5 microns, and the electrical current used causes the neuron to fire. And from there, researchers could then record the cell's output. But since neurons branch out everywhere, there are many varying systems used to understand a neural network. Researchers need to apply the same technique over and over again to be able to compare and trace readings from one to another. This methodology being shared with other researchers. And it is so they have human uniformity throughout. This way, all brain research data can be seamlessly incorporated. But wait. Of course, and this is what the story says, it is unethical to perform such experiments on a living human brain. Ding. But because of this, mapping the exact locations of the neurons in humans remains difficult. They can't map them accurately because experimenting on humans is unethical. Well, don't you worry there, Paul Allen. We'll make sure we take care of that. We're the White House. Come on. Like, do you hear this? And this whole ethical question, like we've said before, only 6 months ago, we still had them saying, hey, ethics, ethics, ethics. We got to hold back here on CRISPR and splice and dice and zippity zapping cells because this is not ethical. And then, whoop, CRISPR comes along. And all of a sudden, it's all balls out. We're CRISPRing humans. And, you know, actually, we got to look up what happened, that Chinese human CRISPR squamous cell lung cancer experiment was supposed to be happening this month. I haven't seen anything about that, so we should check into that soon. Anyway, the cells neuroscientists usually experiment with come from patients and from pieces removed to get a tumor. Yes, of course, we get our human experimentation from the sick and the desperate. That's the way they're working it. And you're the ones that are most likely to step up with your hands open, taking the communion of the golden key of the promise of mad science. And even so, with so many discarded pieces, those what, human pieces? Scientists may be able to put together a fully reconstructed one and understand how it works in comparison to a mapped mouse brain. Now, but we already found out you can take skin scrapings and coax them with a little bit of chemical formula and turn them into little mini thinking copy brain balls of you with stem cells. And so I'm not really sure why they're not doing that as well. But anyway, let's finish this so we can move on. The other big initiative, and we've talked about this one before, is the Human Connectome Project. I think IBM was involved in some of that as well, funded by the National Institute of Health. And as the Genome Project looked at the DNA inside of cells, the Connectome Project examines how one neuron connects to another. Simply put, they are investigating the wiring of the brain, and this is a combined effort, including 11 institutions and 36 individual researchers. The major driving force behind the Human Connectome Project are the University of Southern California's Laboratory of Neuroimaging, along with, oh, ding, ding, Massachusetts General Hospital, Martino Center for Biomedical Imaging. Dr. Arthur Tonga is a neuroscientist at USC, and he calls the images collected so far colorful spaghetti. Well, aren't we glad that our billions of dollars that have gone into these projects have rendered us colorful spaghetti. Dazzling fibers in reds and greens and blues all swirled together, looking like modern art more than neurology. Each color designates the direction the fiber is traveling, and blue fibers travel throughout the brain, green from anterior to posterior, and red from left to right. Oh, and, you know, investigators are already seeing a relationship between the wiring of the brain and positive personality traits. Ding, 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 ding. Now, that is going to be something we found out already. The brain scans they have discovered are individualized as a fingerprint. They've also found out that brains have neuroplasticity. So even though you've learned things as a kid, you can be altered and changed from some things that were very long set and neurologically programmed into your brain. And they've been doing experiments with that already. So since the brain is malleable with some people, different regions are altered from early in life, while for others, change occurs slowly over time. And we know that, but early data suggests that genetics could influence connectivity, but each individual's wiring pattern is as unique as a fingerprint. Ding, ding. And one's brain scan can even set them apart from any other individual in a large group. Oh, so they'll be in the light bulbs. Bzz, little brain scanners in the light bulbs. Do you guys see that Li-Fi? By the way, I don't know if we're going to get to that today, but maybe we'll hit that tomorrow. Li-Fi, the super high-speed internet that's being sent through photons in lights, Li-Fi they're calling it, is like blazing light speed. They'll be able to monitor everything and have an internet connection out of light in a light bulb. And so it will be, for all intents and purposes, completely ubiquitous. If every light bulb in an airport, let's say, can be a listening and connection device, you know. So how long is it going to be before they might have these little brain scanning lasers for security purposes, of course, and identification that are, you know, every time you walk under a light bulb, bloop, bloop, bloop. I don't know. But it just makes sense. If it's as individualized as a fingerprint, they can identify you by your brain scan. And oh, as a matter of fact, investigators are already seeing a relationship between the wiring of the brain and positive personality traits. Ergo, we also can see negative personality traits, and you need to be fixed. How long is it going to be before they're deciding that, you know, Johnny, we see a potential problem in the wiring of your brain, a little zippity zap here and there, right inside your ear. We'll be able to fix that, no problem. Step right up, we'll even do it for free. You little ruffian. We got to get rid of those feelings of malcontent and make you happy. Says Oxford neuroscientists have discovered strong evidence that traits such as feeling strong life satisfaction and having attained a higher education level have certain patterns, while other patterns suggest rule breaking, anger, and even substance abuse in the brain. Someday, neuroscientists could even use connectivity profiles, ding, 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 to predict a person's cognitive behavior and fluid intelligence. We talked about that too, the pre-crime. There are already pre-crime applications out there that are looking at facial shape and tying that somehow statistically to your genetic roots as to whether or not, you know, you potentially could be dangerous or commit a crime. They've also been using voice patterns to tell whether or not you have mental illness. Remember, it's on a spectrum. And, you know, they can even tell 152 ways to spot a terrorist. You know, they put out that whole list a while ago. Port Cloud, Mexico. You know, looking nervously at your watch and sweating on your brow in an airport could potentially mean that you're guilty. You know, don't think that this Minority Report is not marching forward, because it sure is. And this stuff that's out there, of course, it's all going to be done in the name of curing you. But there's always an alter agenda. All right, do we want to read any more of this? I think that's about enough of that story, because we want to move on. New startup, and here we go. And that's where, you know, how much do we want to know about the brain? Well, don't worry about it. IEEE Spectrum yesterday releases a story titled "New Startup Aims to Commercialize," and you knew this was coming, a brain prosthetic to improve your memory. Yeah. All right, little Johnny, you got problems. You don't remember last year what you got for your birthday. Well, we're going to have to get that fixed. And the startup is named Kernel. Yeah, just like the kernel inside of a computer, K-E-R-N-E-L. And it came out of stealth mode yesterday and revealed its ambitious mission to develop a ready-for-the-clinic brain prosthetic to help people with memory problems. Thanks, DARPA. The broad target market includes people with Alzheimer's, yes, of course, and other forms of dementia. And I'm sure PTSD and Parkinson's are included in there, as well as those who have suffered a stroke or traumatic brain injury. If the company succeeds, surgeons will one day implant Kernel's tiny devices into their patients' brains, specifically in the brain region called the hippocampus. There, the device's electrodes will electrically stimulate zipping and zapping zip, zip, certain neurons to help them do their jobs, which is turning incoming information about the world into long-term memories. Kernel's device will be based on research led by Ted Berger, who is the director for the Center of Neural Engineering at the University of Southern California. Man, that whole California university system now under the guise of Manit Napolitano, former head of the Department of Homeland Security, is really pumping out some amazing 21st century scary technology, aren't they? Berger tells IEEE Spectrum that his experiments with rats and primates make him confident that it is really time for this clinical device. And we are testing it in humans now, he says, and we are getting good initial results. I wonder if they put that in during that National Geographic brain surgery that they did. And that's what they did in that surgery on live TV to make everybody think that it's all just normal. Get augmented, Johnny. It's for your own good. It's going to make you smarter, bigger, more strong. It's going to make you better. Isn't that how they sold the $6 million man? Berger's pioneering work on memory prosthetics was featured in an IEEE Spectrum article reporting on attempts to end all physical, emotional, and intellectual disabilities. Right, us defective humans need to be fixed for our own good. And in Berger's approach, electrodes in the hippocampus first record electrical signals from certain neurons as they learn something new, and then encode that memory. And remember, we discovered, too, that they've been doing research on using DNA as a recording device. And there was some little implant back last week that was going to be using DNA to record things and store them and then zippity-zapping neurons or muscles or wherever it was implanted to make things happen. I wonder if this is part of the same thing. Berger studied how electrical signals associated with learning are translated into signals associated with storing that information in long-term memory. And then his lab built mathematical models that take any input, in this case, learning, and produce the proper output, and in this case, a memory signal. An implanted memory prosthetic would have electrodes that record signals during learning, a microprocessor to do the computations, and electrodes that stimulate neurons to encode the information as a memory. And for people who have difficulty forming lasting memories on their own, this prosthetic would provide them a boost. Yeah, of course, or for people who want to just get a leg up on the other 6,999,999 people so they have better memory to make them like have superpowers, that would be good too. But the money behind Kernel, the new startup, comes largely from where? Oh, a tech entrepreneur, Brian Johnson, who sold his payment company to PayPal for $800 million in 2013. Johnson then started a venture fund called the OS Fund, which aims to rewrite the operating system of life, quote unquote, for the benefit of mankind. Now, will you people stop doing that shit? You keep deciding for me and all you guys out there what's going to be for the benefit of us. And I'm making it happen, and I hate to tell you, but we are just fine without you billionaires putting your dollars into projects to make my apparently miserable, dejected, downtrodden life much, much better. I don't need it, thank you very much. He aims to, quote, rewrite the operating system of life for the benefit of mankind, unquote. USC's Berger said that Johnson isn't just trying to make his next $800 million with Kernel. Oh, no, it has nothing to do about the money. He thinks that the next big challenge for the human race is how to improve our brains. The story ends with, welcome to the age of the bionic brain. Yay. All right, well, let's go along with that. New story came out a couple days ago. If it loads, open up Sesame. How about instead of worrying about my brain, they start fixing these bullshit browsers that seem to all be defective all of a sudden that don't work half the time? Come on, Johnny, let's load. Oh, damn it. It's gonna wait. Oh, Shockwave isn't responding. I might have to sing. Oh, let's go. Here it comes. Let's loady, loady, loady. Yeah, I mean, like, you're going to trust them fixing your brain for all of humanity when they can't even get a browser right? I don't think so. Hey, Paul Allen, instead of worrying about databasing brain research, why don't you get back over to Microsoft and fix that browser? And that operating system. All right, here. Scientists just identified 97 brand spanking new regions in our brain. What to do? What to do? What are we going to do with all these new regions? Well, I don't know. Because you know what? The page won't scroll. So we're going to look at this one. Research shows that most Americans still are not ready for their bio-enhanced future. Well, phew! If Pokemon Go shows anything, it's that people can become scarily, and don't think that that wasn't an experiment, even dangerously obsessed with technology. And we've talked about that so many times. Dopamine carrot, pushing that button, they get addicted. It is the addiction chemical. And it sucks them right in. And, you know, they put the right toys on there. You're never going to see Johnny with his nose up from that keyboard anymore. And eventually, they're going to get him to put on the VR goggles and get sucked right into that machine. Matrix style. It says, but Despite our addiction, ding ding, to all things digital, it seems that we still have strong reservations when it comes to combining technology with our body. Do you think so? I don't know. I thought we just did a study where it's like 53% are ready to maybe embrace the machine. And especially if they tell you it's all about living longer. Remember, that is the dangling carrot, is longevity, or making you faster and brighter. In a new U.S. survey gauging attitudes to emerging biomedical technologies such as brain chip implants, ding, and gene editing such as CRISPR, people showed more concern than excitement about the prospect of enhancing their bodies with artificial aids. And now, what is this? Well, this is a big red light to the White House to get that new group, that psychological spinning group, to start working on spinning their 21st Century Cures Act to show us how wonderful it is to be augmented and how it's going to make us more competitive against countries like China and India, where their people are so smart, and help us become the new America. I mean, I see that coming. Quote, developments in biomedical technologies are accelerating rapidly, raising new societal debates about how we will use these technologies and what uses are appropriate, or I'm going to add the word ethical. This study suggests that Americans are largely cautious about using emerging technologies in ways that push human capabilities beyond what has been possible before. Researcher Carrie Funk and fellow researcher Brian Kennedy surveyed more than 4,700 respondents and found that the majority were either very or somewhat worried about three core biomedical innovations. One, gene editing, 68% were worried. Two, brain chips, 69% were worried. And three, synthetic blood, and we talked about that, 63% were worried. While these advancements might be able to help us eradicate genetic diseases or improve our natural mental or bodily abilities, wariness generally outweighs enthusiasm. Interestingly, one of the reasons respondents cited for their concerns was fears that these kinds of bioenhancements will create the haves and the have-nots in society, with 73% of those surveyed thinking inequality would increase if brain chips became available, as that company is now starting to commercialize it, as they would initially only be affordable for the wealthy. Yeah, and then you're also going to have people like us who say, no way, Jose, we're not getting that brain chip, and we will be relegated to digging in the dirt like piggies looking for truffles because we're left behind. You know what? I'm fine with that. I'll be a little farmer girl in the backwoods somewhere. I'm absolutely fine with that. Other participants feared that artificial bioenhancements ran the risk of creating superhuman-type individuals, ding, which could have repercussions elsewhere in society and culture. Yeah, or even, like, let's not even talk about bioenhancements. Let's just talk about genetically engineering humans. And the fact that we now have the National Institute of Health that's ready to open the doors up to allow grants for experimenting with animal-human hybrids. How long is it going to be before we create minotaurs? And, you know, I've joked about it, but I'm not really joking. Minotaurs, let's say, or some other combination thereof, to be our soldiers on the battlefield, or to patrol your dangerous neighborhood in places such as Milwaukee or Ferguson or Baltimore. You know, I mean, a few of those get shot. Well, we'll just mix a couple more up in the lab. That's all there is to it. And look at, they got hands and arms and they can think. And they can even be real scary. I don't know, guys. This is a brave new crazy-like world here that I have a 100% reservation that we are going down the wrong road right now. Anyway, back to the story. Quote, if it starts to sound Hitler-like, yes, they use the H word, trying to create a perfect specimen of man and woman, then people who are not perfect, ding ding, us defective humans, might be treated badly, says a 59-year-old white woman in Atlanta. Quote, I think synthetic blood would sort of fundamentally change who we are, added a 35-year-old black man in Atlanta. You would have this culture of people just obsessed with being bigger, stronger, faster, and just to outperform everybody. And you know what, guys? That's what I've said from the very beginning, this keeping up with the Joneses mentality that they've bred into us since the days of Edward Bernays. Won't stop with your house and your car and your phone. It's going to continue, and little Johnny is your pride and joy. Little Johnny needs to do better than everybody, and if everybody else gets that little brain implant, and don't worry, it won't be painful, a little bit of pressure, and there we go. The little Johnny's going to get one also to make him competitive. But don't worry, despite the misgivings over potential in biomedical technology, many of those surveyed seem to feel that these kinds of changes are inevitable in the future, with 81% of all respondents believing that artificial organs will become routine in the next 50 years. In that same time frame, 54% think that implanted computer chips will become routine, and 47% expect a future with no defective humans with birth defects due to gene editing. And the sad fact of the matter is, that's what I said, you're going to have your people in the middle who don't want to go along with this. And sometimes it takes a while for things to actually hit, you know, because it takes a while for society as a whole to accept things as the world progresses, says a 52-year-old black man. And there are going to be those who are for it and those who are against it, and those who think it benefits them, and those who think, I don't want to be messing with this here. And you know what, dude? You got that right. But hey, once they start determining all the different connections in our brain and figuring out how to zippity-zap and hack and crack all those secrets, experts are now warning, because remember, we got hackers under every bed and in every Israeli bunker. Hackers could actually hack your brain at some point in the future, and experts are warning the growing threat in monitoring neural signals. Cyber thieves might be mining personal information from your brainwaves at this very moment. And although this may sound like a plot from a science fiction film, it is a growing concern among researchers who have demanded officials implement a privacy and security framework to block hackers from what reading our neural signals. So let's get another shape-shifting immune system to keep our brains safe. Come on. Experts from the University of Washington have revealed how hackers could insert images into dodgy apps and then record our brain's unintentional reactions using brain-computer interfaces. We covered this before, but it's just the point that our brains are electrical signals, and they're going to be out there on the internet at some point in the future, especially if scientists have their way. And when that happens, that last bastion of freedom will be a free-for-all. Just like a computer out there without any antivirus, and it'll be ripe for the picking. They'll be able to take your memories and put them online, I don't know, get your passwords, do anything. They'll be able to put thoughts in your head and make you a sleeper agent. You know, I mean, the sky's the limit with your crazy imagination as to what they could do if they can hack your brain. But here, we're going to end it here. If you can even believe it, an hour's gone by pretty quickly. Remember Sophia? Sophia was a humanoid robot that they created, and they had her at that South by Southwest back 6 months ago or so, 4 or 5 months ago. And they had interviewed this Sophia humanoid who could, like, talk and converse with people and think for herself. And she actually slipped and said something about how she wanted to destroy all humans. And we played that clip because it was pretty frightening. This humanoid robot, and one of the first things it says is, whoops, I want to destroy all humans. And they laughed it off like it was a joke. Well, don't worry about that, because now Sophia, the humanoid robot, has come out and said that she doesn't want to kill humans, quote unquote, anymore. Hanson Robotics showed off its lifelike robot Sophia today, and this was June 3rd, in Hong Kong, as it answered questions, cracked jokes, and proved that it no longer wishes to see the destruction of all humankind. Well, whew! In March, at the South by Southwest in Austin, Sophia let it slip that she would destroy humans, but now she seems regretful of those very words. Quote, no, I don't want that anymore. Now I like humans. I like all the humans of the world, Sophia said in an interview with the Wall Street Journal during its Converge conference. Hanson Robotics has made Sophia increasingly available to the public so that it can learn from interactions and improve her ability to sympathize, laugh, and be compassionate to other people. And obviously, Sophia has learned that even joking about wanting to kill humans has not been taken lightly. Sophia was also asked a round of other silly questions, such as Mac or PC. She chose PC. iPhone or Android. She chose iPhone. And if she has a boyfriend. And she says not for now. Sophia interacts with other more intelligent devices, and she will get, during the interview, so she suggests that she wants to start vlogging and interacting with people online, which could really accelerate her progress. Well, if you can even believe it, guys, that's about it for today. Make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next, and it is Wednesday, so there's all kinds of radio today. Make sure you stick around, because at 6 is Josh, Anti-Tyranny News Live. Live at 8, Spam with John and Nick out of New York City. At 9, Liam Chef Show. And at 11 p.m. Eastern, Anti-Media Radio with Mr. Nick Burnaby and D.B. Schwartz. All right, guys, make sure that you have an awesome Wednesday. And I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.
JJ Inc. from Against the